Welcome to this week's edition of Outdoors Online, a weekly webcast produced by the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. I'm your host, Mike Anderson. My guest this week is Game and Fish Director Terry Steinwand. Today we're going to talk about something that happened 25 years ago, Terry, basically a natural phenomenon. A five-year drought broke, major rainfall, July of 1993 is the wettest month in North Dakota history. Terry, you were the Fisheries Division Chief back then. Explain when this five-year drought broke and we had that wet month in July of 1993.
I remember it very, very well, Mike. We were struggling. Lake Sakakawea was at very low levels. Devil's Lake, we'd had fish kills, very low levels, and a lot of our smaller lakes were drying up. I absolutely remember when the heavens opened up that July. I was actually on my way back from a Governor's Cup rules meeting, and it was absolutely torrential downpour all the way from Garrison back to Bismarck, and streets were flooded, everything else. It wasn't necessarily a lovely sight at the time, but in retrospect, from a fisheries perspective, we've been living that for the last 25 years. So it has been good in that respect, and we granted North Dakota's been in a wet cycle to some extent, but there's some that gain, some that lose, because up until that time, with CRP on the landscape since 1986, it was just maturing where the upland game birds were really coming along great, but fisheries were really suffering. And really, it was a kind of a steady decline from 1988 on, but with CRP maturing, upland game was doing very well, but fisheries weren't because of the lack of water. When 1993 came along, it was a start of a wet cycle that we're really still in North Dakota. And our fisheries have absolutely blossomed. Big fisheries, mid-sized fisheries, and small fisheries across the board.
Sure. Craig Burley wrote an article in July of 1993, fisheries started something called Priority Lakes.
Right.
Explain that, Terry.
What we were in the process of doing is, the Fisheries Division in the North Dakota Game and Fish Department is not a huge division, only 24 people within the entire division responsible for all the fisheries and boat ramps across the state. So we started a process, okay, where do we put our efforts to put more management activities, to gather more information on these lakes? So really, the rains of 1993 didn't necessarily change that process. It kind of changed the emphasis on what it was doing is okay, with Lake Sakakawea the way it is, we don't have any control over water, but we have control over regulations, over fish stocking, data gathering. So we decided to put more emphasis on some of these areas given the small manpower that we had and still do have at this point in time. And it's just kind of carried on and it's worked well even up to this day.
Let's talk about when the water was dropping, the vegetation was coming up, we probably had more potential for winter kill in a lot of these lakes.
We did. And I'll start with the high priority lakes, like a Lake Sakakawea. Even though there was plenty of water and we were not even in danger of getting a winter kill, what happens is you don't get very good spawning activity. And we prefer on a lakes like that not to stock fish because natural reproduction can normally take care of itself. But we were finding it wasn't even doing that. And you don't need good walleye reproduction every year, but you do need the forage production, whether it's spot-tail shiner, a rainbow smelt, or what it might be. And when you have such low water levels, that spawning substrate that they require to lay their eggs and for those eggs to hatch was either non-existent or quickly disappearing. So we were looking at, okay, do we need to enhance or supplement that fishery through stocking? Do we need to have a different size or a different limit on the lakes to get some growth? And if you remember during that time frame, we actually had instituted a minimum length limit on Lake Sakakawea of 14 inches. And 3 years later, we were able to take it off because that's a promise we made to the public. When it's no longer meeting the need of that fishery, we're going to take it off. And that's something we're proud of to this day is we don't have any unnecessary bureaucratic regulations. We try to keep them as simple as possible and as general as possible across the state. But that's what these priority lakes, this priority lakes emphasis was meant to do.
And it was all because of the low water.
And it was all because of the low water. And even the same concept still applies to even high water.
Okay, water came back. Devil's Lake, you know, came up 6 feet. Lake Sakakawea, Lake Oahe came up 15 feet. District lakes had water. Tell me what happened once the water came back.
wow, we had the potential for tremendous fisheries. The legacy fisheries, the fisheries that have been there for a long time, certainly flourished. But what really happened is there are an awful lot of new lakes that were occurred. Something that in 1992 you probably hunted pheasants on were 20 feet deep now and can provide a fisheries. What I told staff and have always told staff is you have to create some opportunities, but you always got to be on the lookout for opportunities also. And there were an awful lot of opportunities, and I think today is a good example, going from about 180 lakes when I was fisheries chief in 1993 to where we're at now at about 425 to 450 fishing waters across the state. That's looking for opportunities, not just where can we stock fish and they'll survive and provide a fisheries, but access to that fisheries. We do not stock waters where we don't have some form of guaranteed public access to that.
Sure, and that flooded vegetation provided a lot of...
Oh, tremendous. Well, the people that lived through that time probably realized the northern pike and perch populations just exploded, and that flooded vegetation is just tremendous and almost optimal spawning habitat for those species. And it showed what species really had the best opportunity at that time, and it was northern pike and perch.
And basically, Terry, that's really when our lake started growing.
Yes.
Was that
1993, it didn't jump to 450 lakes, of course, but over time we've gotten there. But by the late 90s, we were over 200, I think right around 225 lakes. And again, with the wet cycle continuing the way it has, it's just grown constantly. And some of them lakes had been there for a while. It's just, again, with a small staff, and we have to work with private landowners saying, okay, where can we get access? And I have to say, private landowners, it benefits them also, but they've been tremendous to work with for the most part.
Okay, let's move on to Waterfall. It was really dry, obviously. A lot of wetlands are dry. How was Waterfall back in those days?
Same thing. I didn't mention Waterfall earlier, but the aquatic obligate, or those that need water to really sustain themselves and flourish, fisheries and waterfowl were the two areas where, as upland game and the upland species like white-tailed deer were going up and up and up, fisheries and waterfowl were going down. And even though we had a drought last year, hopefully just a short-term drought, that we've seen it in the wetlands being decreased out there. And waterfowl, even though still currently pretty darn good from when you look at the long-term, they have certainly increased concurrent with the water resource. And again, that's not unique to North Dakota. North Dakota and South Dakota, southern part of Manitoba, exactly the same. So these birds don't recognize geopolitical borders. So if they're going north, they're going south. But the part is the prairie pothole region has just flourished in terms of waterfowl in that same time frame.
Here's an example of the water index in 1992 to 1993. In 1993 of July, during the brood survey, duck brood surveys, was up 261%. And it was 40% higher than the highest recorded on record in 1970. So it shows you that the water, we had water.
Well, it's like we always say, if the good habitat is provided out there that they need to complete their life cycle, Mother Nature has a really, really nice way of getting them to respond, and they have, whether it's fisheries or waterfowl, they have absolutely responded.
Let's talk about upland game birds, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, partridge. Water that summer was not necessarily good for those species.
During the drought, as long as you have some moisture and bug production, they're going to do quite well, and they were doing very well up to that point, along with, again, CRP maturing, more habitat nesting and cover on the landscape. 1993, with those heavy rains in July, I don't remember exactly what the harvest was that fall, but I think it was probably right around 200,000 to 300,000 birds, somewhere in there. So it pretty well shows that we can't balance everything out there, but we try to get as close as we can. If we would have got those rains in later summer, they probably would have done all right that particular year. But overall, even then, we'll won't say sacrifice, but we'll reduce that opportunity for 1 year for the long-term gain.
Sure. How about big game?
Big game, actually the wet cycle, other than losing cover in some of those lakes that I referred to earlier that you might have been deer hunting or pheasant hunting a couple years prior to 1993, CRP really kind of picked it up for them. Again, at our peak, we were about 3.3 million acres of CRP. And if you think of the early to mid 2000s, we had some really, really nice winters. It was some wet summers, not like a July of 93 type events, but pretty sustainably wet. But with that CRP cover and all in the nice winters, our deer herd was just flourishing at that point in time too. Of course, we had to manage them because we were getting hundreds upon hundreds of depredation complaints in the winter. And we really, what we call, got after them, increased our deer license numbers, trying to reduce that herd a little bit. And of course, Mother Nature decided once again that, well, let me see, winters of 2009, 10, and 11, I'm going to show you guys, you probably shouldn't have done that. Well, had we had that predictive capability, we probably wouldn't have shot them down that far. But looking in retrospect, it would probably have been some lost opportunity because those deer might have died anyway.
Sure. Where do we go from here?
Well, there's a lot of stuff we can't control. Number one is going to be weather. We cannot absolutely control weather. So we have to guess a little bit. You can predict weather to some extent. National Weather Service shows that you can predict it fairly well. We have some research out there that says, okay, you can predict some hard winters, which can be a driving factor for our upland game and deer herd, and depending on how deep the lake is, on our fisheries also. So we just do the best we can moving around the winter, and again, always that habitat base. Keep those lakes relatively deep. Keep the cover on the landscape. Keep the winter cover out there. That's the best we can do on an unpredictable landscape like North Dakota.
A lot of good information, Terry. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Like Terry just mentioned, North Dakota has over 400 lakes. To find out more information on how to get to a certain lake, what species of fish are in the lake, and when the lake was stocked, go to the Game and Fish website at gf.nd.gov. For Game and Fish Director Terry Steinlund and the rest of the staff here at the Game and Fish Department, thanks for joining us for this week's Outdoors Online. We'll see you again next week.